This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Talking the talk with head tongue to walking the walk. Education can be so awkward. Spotlight on academics we know.
Kia ora, haere mai, and welcome to Spotlights on Academics We Know, the podcast. I'm your host, Adrian Buckingham, in Otapoti, Dunedin. Join me for conversations with lecturers, researchers, and practitioners about contemporary challenges, ideas, and potential opportunities for education and upskilling. Learning can be awkward. We aim to normalize the discomfort of being at the edge of new knowledge. This is so awkward. Tanya Darrett is a career specialist who lectures on the Bachelor of Social Service at Te Pūkenga Otago Polytechnic. Tanya has returned to Dunedin after 25 years away. Tanya loves traveling in her van and seeing new places. Kia ora, Tanya. How are you?
Kia ora. I'm good, thank you.
So excited to be having this conversation because you are one of my new colleagues, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about who you are.
So a little bit about me. So I am the career specialty lecturer on the BSS at Otago Polytech. I've been working in career development for, must be about 15 years at the moment. And what does that mean?
Yeah, what is career development? That was going to be my next question.
So career development, career management, we get called a lot of different things. So what it is all about work and life's intersections with that work. So we consider career to be something that's lifelong, and it is all about how career impacts life and life impacts career. A lot of it's around working around transitions, the different transitions that people go through.
Mm-hmm. What kind of transitions are you talking about?
So it might be going from school into work or school into tertiary education.
Mm-hmm.
It might be going from tertiary into work. It might also be around change. So any sort of changes that happen to people that impact on their work.
So and moving, relationship changes,
yeah, moving, relationship
aging.
Yeah, absolutely. And aging, retirement, all of those things that might impact on a way a person works or doesn't work. And when we talk about work too as well, we're not just talking about paid work, we're talking about unpaid work also.
All right. So what would you consider unpaid work?
So that might be voluntary work, mm-hmm. or it might be the caring that a parent provides to their children or their parents as well. Mm-hmm. So it's anything really that involves work and the meaning that people get from that work.
Yeah. All right. Well, tell me a little bit about the different types of work you've been able to do.
Okay. So the different types I've been able to. So for the last, where does mine start? So mine started here in Otago, actually.
Tell me about that.
So I was a student here at Otago University for a few years, where I studied behaviour comm actually at that point in time, although I did drop the commerce in the end, and I majored in psych.
Uh-huh.
I then went from there into hospitality.
Wow.
As people do. And worked in and around New Zealand, particularly spent a few years in Queenstown working in hospitality and kind of coming back and forth from there to Dunedin at times. And later on, I went on to do a graduate diploma in management communication, which is where I did my first, career paper, which was a consulting paper. It was really interesting. At the time, I was working with young people who were vulnerable and had not worked with the school system very well. So I was teaching them NCEA and hospitality. But I did this paper and it fascinated me. So I went on after that to do the grad cert in career development.
Okay.
Through AUT.
What about that course captured your imagination? Was there a particular concept or an overall feeling of the course?
I think, because it was around, again, it was around change. So it was really primarily that particular paper was around the impact of change on workers within an organisation and the process that they go through, which is huge. A lot of people, you know, feel that their work is part of their identity.
Oh, and so, I imagine most people feel that way. Yeah, you know, we spend so much of our waking hours.
We do.
Doing work, at work.
Yeah, it's the thing we actually do. Or most people do over their lifetime that do the most. Mm-hmm. And so it has a huge impact. You know, the only other thing that we do more is sleep.
Like, incidentally, I'm very fascinated by, but sleep, but maybe we should talk more about work.
Well, I enjoy sleep. I try not to do it at work.
Yeah.
So I think that was the thing that really struck me is the the impact on people's well-being and how organisations can make it easier or they can make it harder on people and the sort of support as well that they need or the wraparound support that they need outside of those organisations too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. What's the most interesting job you've had?
The most interesting job that I've had. Well, gosh, I've had a lot of really interesting jobs, I think.
We could do a top.
I've been
three if you want.
I've been pretty lucky. I think, I would actually say that all of the jobs I've had have been really interesting in this area. So I think in terms of what, you know, I loved the early work that I was doing with young people. Absolutely loved it because I still get to look back on that now, and I know that the work that was done had a big impact on them, which was really, really cool. I'm still connected to a lot of them, and that was almost 20 years ago now.
Wow.
And I can see the things that, you know, they're doing and that they've accomplished, and I love that. I loved, I loved the role that I had for a university in Australia, Deakin University, where I started off just going in there on a maternity leave contract and ended up becoming the regional team leader. And from there, I became the manager of that area as well.
So what did you do in that role?
There were 80,000 students.
80,000?
Yeah. So it was a huge cohort.
A large chunk of Dunedin.
And so we had responsibility to help them, work out what it was that they wanted to do. A lot of people, obviously, you know, they start their education and actually they're a little bit unsure. They take a subject because they enjoyed it in school or so often because they actually really liked a teacher. And they work out, you know, sometime through that degree that actually maybe this isn't quite the right thing for me.
Yeah.
And so we would talk to them about, you know, what their options were, and how to make the best, most informed decision, the strategies that they could use. And, you know, we provided them with a lot of employability help as well, you know. So we did a lot of work with students directly there.
Mm-hmm.
And helping them to find the right thing for them at that point in time. The other thing that we did, which was really exciting, is you know, there was a lot of change that happened in that particular university. It was very future focused, and so we got to experiment with the first, I suppose, AI that was, you know, coming.
Tell me about that.
And so it was really interesting.
The first AI.
We had a partnership with IBM. And
wow, I haven't heard those three letters in a row for a long time.
I know. And IBM had developed an AI called Watson. And so we were...
Watson. Oh, this sounds familiar. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were implementing that into student services. Now, it was fascinating. It was really interesting. And a lot of the university's focus was around technology, and the changes that were happening around the university were around technology. And that was... So that was just one of, you know, several kind of initiatives that they were undergoing. But it was fascinating for the fact that it failed.
Oh, okay.
So it was definitely not there yet in terms of student services. I think there was a lack of understanding that information is one thing, but it didn't consider the individual in that information.
And surely that's still the issue with AI.
It is still the issue with AI.
Yes, so you need a human...
You need a human touch, yeah, because yeah. Everybody's journey is slightly different. We've all got different barriers. We've all got different things that we're good at and things that we enjoy, and all of that needs to be considered too. It's not just one size fits all or one source of truth.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. So... At the moment, you're teaching on the Bachelor of Social Service and you're teaching career practice.
Yes.
What do you like about your current role?
What do I like about my current role? Well, I really love what I do. I really love what I do. And so it's nice to be able to share that with the students. That's really lovely. And it's also the other thing I think I love about it is how creative and insightful they are. You know, I learn from them. I learn a lot from them. Every lesson is for all of us.
Yeah, it's a conversation, not a lecture.
Yeah. So it's great. I think that's probably what I enjoy about it most. And I can see too, I think that the importance of the area, is growing. Mm-hmm. That we're all in for a lot of change to the way we work over the next few years. And so I think it's a good area for them to be in and to be able to provide the support to people who are coming through. You know, young people, for instance, at the moment, you know, those of us, I suppose, who are Gen X or millennials, even, you know, we've worked and we change jobs, and we will have, you know, more than one role, unlike probably baby boomers who tended to kind of were more likely to just have one role over the course of their career, one paid role. I think it was up to seven for Gen X, but for the generation that are coming through, the changes that are happening will mean that they're not just working one role at a time. Mm-hmm. They will potentially be working several roles.
At the same time.
At the same time.
Is this the gig economy? Is that what that is?
The gig economy is certainly, influencing that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. And roles are changing anyway too, you know. A good example, I was talking to the students the other day, is that, you know, I love to write. Mm-hmm. It's something that I've always really enjoyed.
Yeah.
But now there are tools that can do that writing for me and can do a lot of it faster. And I'm, you know, the research side of it also really loved. Mm-hmm. But again, there are tools that can do that so much more quickly than I can now as well.
Do you find that quite daunting or interesting? Or
look, I think it's both.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting. It's fascinating, and I think it's all about how to manage those tools and to provide some accountability as well to those tools too. But I but I think it will. It is probably very daunting for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, surely the knowledge you have and the knowledge you're sharing with your students is pretty empowering.
Well, you hope so, right? And because that's the key word, right? Hope is really important. Uh-huh. I think so. You know, their ability to help people navigate this new way of working over the next few years is really important.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about hope, haven't we? Because we were both sort of looking at how do we teach hope and how do we talk about embedding that in ourselves and moving forward.
And I mean, you know, there's a lot of work being done on that, right? You know, hope, meaning, optimism, because it has been shown that people who have optimism and have hope in what they do are more successful.
And it can be a taught skill. It can be learned.
Yes.
And that's so important to know that it's not just this finite thing that you're either born with or not born with. And quite separate from, and of course it exists in sort of a spiritual way, but actually there's a real psychological existence of hope as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. More secular approach.
Yeah.
So how has research shaped your path or the work that you're doing at the moment?
So research, yeah. So I'm not doing any research at the moment. Other people's research has definitely shaped my path. There's no doubt about it. Research is really important to our area, actually, and there are some incredibly dynamic, I suppose, researchers or academics out there at the moment who are doing some incredible work around hope. And, you know, I have to say that Canada's probably leading the way in terms of research around career development. They're doing,
Interesting.
Yeah. We've got a lot of people, for instance, who are looking at the effect of good career support on mental health, which is a fascinating area and one that I feel quite genuinely interested in, because during COVID, actually, I ran a nationwide project for the Tertiary Education Commission, where we had 35 careers professionals who were out and working with the community. It was really fascinating to us to see the impact of the work that people were doing and its impact during that time on mental health as well. There was significant burnout, which was, you know, obviously really interesting. There were a lot of people who were suddenly going, you know, I've just spent all of this time with my family, and I've realised that what I'm doing at the moment isn't actually what I want to continue doing, because my priorities have changed. You know, I'm rethinking everything. So, it was really, it's a very interesting area. And, you know, again, the other areas that interest me a lot is... around women, probably, particularly. And
tell me about women.
Mature women in particular. Yeah. So over the age of 45, you know, we in particular deal with a lot of ageism, workplace ageism, and that relationship to how we transition out of work is quite interesting as well, too, because, you know, it's an awful thing, but in Australia, for instance, and probably the same here, I would say, although I don't think there's been a lot of research into it yet, is a woman who is over the age of, I think it's 55, is more likely to be homeless because they don't have the same superannuation.
Wow.
Or opportunities to work.
And this is, I assume, partly due to women's experience of motherhood. Does that contribute?
Yeah,
beyond that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not. It is well beyond that. I mean, there's always been a pay gap.
Yes.
And there still is.
Yep.
Despite
important
efforts.
To remind people. It still exists.
It still exists. It's better, and we pat ourselves on the back for better, but there is still a gap. Yeah, so part of that is absolutely about the time taken away from work for caring or the priority around that as well. You know, one of the things that again, if we kind of harp back a little bit to COVID, when people work was impacted in the first instance, it was primarily women who were impacted because the roles that went were roles that were part-time or caring roles. And it, you know, right or wrong, it tended to be women who were in those roles.
Just how it went.
Yeah. And so that's just how it went. And so when we look at some of the stats, not so much around employment, but also around, oh gosh, I can't think of the word.
Oh, underutilization.
There you go. Underutilization. Yeah. Okay. Go. Underutilization. Okay.
Sorry. So when we look at some of the stats around underutilization, again, it's, you know, it does, that's where we see a lot of the impact as well, is that, you know, primarily women who are working part time or casually or are not being, not able to work as much as you know, they would want to. But, you know,
just like on a side note, I don't think I've ever heard the word underutilization.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
underutilized.
And I don't want to get too much into employment because there is a perception sometimes, obviously, you know, around career development as being we are people that help people with employment, but that's not actually the case. We do, but it's not our primary, I suppose, primary concern. It's just one of the things that we do.
Your primary concern is
helping people to find the purpose and meaning in their work, really, I think. Yeah.
That is an incredibly valuable thing to offer people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We all need a little bit more of that purpose and meaning. So you work in a learning environment at the moment. It's not the first time.
No, it's not the first time. Yeah. In fact, I've worked in a few learning environments.
Yeah. So what do you like about learning?
I like to learn.
Why do you like to learn?
Why do I like to learn? Natural curiosity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think when you said that every job you've done has been interesting, I thought, actually, is the common factor there that they were all interesting jobs, or was it you and your curiosity?
don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I think they were all interesting jobs as well. Yeah. I think I've been quite lucky. But yeah, curiosity. I've always been curious, and I'm always interested in what's new and what's changing. So, and education is a really great place to learn about that.
Kind of a cutting edge place to be, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So learning can be really uncomfortable sometimes.
Yeah.
Tell me about an awkward learning moment that you've had. Maybe not the most awkward. I can see an image going past your face and you're going, nope, not going to talk about that.
Oh, gosh. Well,
I've made things pretty awkward right now, haven't I? So
only because I
can't. That one time we were in a radio studio.
Stuck in my head about an awkward situation. Anyway, I think actually probably one of my biggest learning opportunities was when I first started working for this university in Australia, and you know, I hadn't had a lot of experience in the careers area. I certainly had never walked into a lecture theatre before. Not as the person who was going to be speaking, obviously, I hadn't walked into a lecture theatre before. And And I was going in to this lecture theatre, and I learned very quickly that actually my New Zealand accent was very thick.
That's a big learning moment. Yeah. In a room full of Australians.
In a room full of Australians who didn't understand a word I said almost. It was actually, which, you know, is a little bit confronting, right? Because we think about this as quite similar, but no, they definitely misunderstood a few words that I'd thrown out there.
Some key words. That does sound uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was. So what did I learn from that? I picked up an Australian accent reasonably quickly.
Well, that's like an adaptive quality. Yeah.
And I found ways of making myself a little bit clearer. Like, you know, I think New Zealanders talk quite quickly. Mm-hmm. So I slowed it down
agree.
A bit. So, that was an awkward moment.
Okay. Well, in the field at the moment, or in the workspace that you're in at the moment, what's the mahi that you really care about? What are you asking questions about and looking more into today? And why does it matter to you?
Yeah, okay. So I think that the thing, and we kind of have touched on it a little bit already, is in terms of a realistic picture of what it looks like out and for people who are in work and looking for work at the moment, and what that will look like over the next few years for them. Yeah. So that is the thing that is most important to me, and helping the students to understand that the rules are changing.
Okay.
And teaching them, I guess, to be aware of what is going on in their surrounds. And it's not just about best practice, it's about how they apply best practice to an environment that they've not necessarily, you know, they've not worked in.
No, you've got these young people learning about careers and advising on careers without having had a career?
Well, actually, I have to say, and which is really, really positive. So a lot of my students are older.
Great.
So, you know, we're
real life experience matters.
So they've got, and for this area, it does matter to some extent. Like, it's great to see some younger people coming through. Absolutely, that's wonderful as well. But to have some sort of experience and makes a really big difference to your ability to support other people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so I've got this amazing range of students who are from, you know, 22 through to 60.
Great. Yeah. Oh, that's such a cool room to be in.
Yeah.
Like, what a spread in terms of experience and perspective.
Yes. Yeah. And it's really nice to see the way they share that with each other as well, the way they work together and the way they so openly share their ideas and their view of life.
Oh, actually, that's so cool. Mm. I mean, that's the great stuff about being in a learning environment, isn't it? It's those relationships and how we help each other evolve and discover new things and change perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what sort of difficulties or challenges are there in the field at the moment?
Yeah, okay. So I think there are a few difficulties and challenges in the field at the moment, and they are being tackled to some extent at a high level. So we've got a really good professional association, CDANS, who...
CDANS?
Yeah, CDANS.
Okay, so Career Development New Zealand.
Association of New Zealand. Yep, okay. Yep. And we also have some very close associations with a lot of, internationally, with a lot of other professional associations, like, as I mentioned, Canada before, but also Australia. So in terms of that, they're looking at a lot of the strategy and the way we integrate career education and in schools particularly, because I guess it's becoming more and more of a focus because of the changes.
Yeah, it has to be, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So there's that side of it, plus of the Tertiary Education Commission as well. They are working on a career system strategy for the entire mm-hmm. country at the moment, which is really good. And part of that, from what I understand, will be about creating some professional benchmarks across the system too.
Okay.
Because one of the things I think that we have seen a lot of over the years is a lot of people working in within the system who aren't necessarily qualified.
Right. Okay.
And they aren't necessarily giving consistent and effective support.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, not that consistency is always a thing, obviously, because it's, you know, when we're working with someone, it's about that person that's in front of us. It's a client-centered practice, generally speaking, because, like I said before, everybody's got their own journey and their own story and their own challenges or, you know, positives to deal with.
Yeah. Well, it's been an interesting job market recently, hasn't it? It's been fairly open. Or how would you describe the job market in the last 6 months or so?
So okay. So this is where we start to think about, though. So yes, the job market has been interesting, and it's one of the things that we'll probably see a bit of in terms of that we've had huge skill gaps.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had a really positive job market in some ways.
In some ways. So there's very particular skill sets that have been missing.
Yeah, there are particular skill sets that have been missing. We can't fill those gaps necessarily in New Zealand for a couple of reasons. You know, one is that we haven't been teaching the skills.
Okay, which skills are these?
or at least teaching them to the extent perhaps that we should have.
Okay.
You know, if we look at the health sector's a really interesting one, right? So mm-hmm. there are so many shortages in all sorts of areas,
mm-hmm.
You know, right through from counselling.
Yes.
To medical.
Right.
You know, it's huge, and everything in between as well.
So if people were willing to retrain, there'd be all sorts of work, but people have to retrain first?
But it's, people need to retrain, or we need to be looking outside of New Zealand to bring people in, which of course is what we're doing. You know, is that the best strategy? Well, I think it's not quite that simple, is it?
There needs to be
a look at a lot of different aspects. You know, retention is a really interesting one as well.
Yeah, well, I definitely got lured to this country 20 years ago
because
there was a teaching shortage.
Right.
And at the time, Canada did not need teachers at all. So I came and I thought I'd come for a year, and then I got offered a job. And then I don't know that it was retention. You just end up somewhere.
Which is great. But at the moment, or at least in the short term, we have had an outflow of skilled people as well.
Yeah, because it's better pay, better conditions.
Better conditions. Yeah,
well, better weather.
I might debate some of the conditions, obviously, but for the most part, I mean, you know, there isn't anywhere I think in the world at the moment where health people working, particularly in hospitals, don't have challenges around workload, for instance. So
that's a really good point.
Yeah, health is a really good one, and retraining is great, but there's another part of that can be challenging as well, in that there are only so many people to teach.
Yeah,
too, or you know, so there aren't necessarily always the places. You know, hospitals can't always facilitate, for instance, you know, placement opportunities.
Yeah.
And I mean, not just hospitals. We've seen some of that this year as well. You know, it's just not always a possibility.
Stretched sectors don't have the luxury of teaching yep. the next generation, really.
Exactly.
They're just having to do the job.
Yeah, so it's kind of this challenging situation. So, yeah, that's I suppose that's one of the things that we've seen over the last few years.
Mm.
The job market, though, is starting to slow a little bit.
Is it?
And like I said, you know, we've had a consistent issue, I guess, with underutilization too, you know. So even though we might look at it and go, okay, employment is at, 3.6 or 3.5%, that's not an indication necessarily of people being able to find the right work for them.
Mm-hmm.
Or enough work for them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when we're sitting at, like, I think it's 9.2 or 9.3 in terms of underutilization, that tells a slightly different story as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what does that mean, 9.3 underutilization?
So 9.3% of the population
yes.
fit into that category. And so that's a significant amount. And what that can be a lot of different things. So this is and you know, I have to say there are different definitions of underutilization.
Okay.
But I believe the way it works here is that anyone who is able to and seeking more work goes into that category.
Okay.
As being underutilized.
Right.
Yep. So you could have, you know, I mean, you could be included in the employment stats if you work a couple of hours a week.
Yeah.
But
it must be really hard on your self-worth to be underutilized.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, you know, there's underutilization and there's also underemployment, right? So
right.
I've got these qualifications and these skills, but I can't use them because they're not needed at the moment too. There's that side of it.
Yeah. That disconnect can be really tricky, I guess, for people.
Yeah.
So if we're talking personally, what are you looking forward to at work?
At work, what am I looking forward to?
Because you actually do more than one job, don't you?
I do, yeah.
So what are you looking forward to?
Oh, gosh. Wow. So today we'll find out whether we've got a particular contract, which would be interesting. That's my, you know, from a private perspective. So that will be, I'm looking forward to finding out the answer to that either way, to be honest. I'm doing some outplacement work as well. So outplacement is essentially supporting people who are dealing with transition at work. So their workplaces, for whatever reason, not able to keep them on, or is looking at changing the roles that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm doing some work around that. And so I'm looking forward to getting stuck into that actually over the next few weeks, because again, it's a really important area. And you know, it's a hard time for people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking forward to helping those people navigate this challenging time and find something else that, you know, they enjoy and that they can find some purpose in.
Oh, that sounds like a great thing to look forward to. And just what really speaks to me is that act of serving your community and like looking after the people that you're working with.
I'm also really looking forward to with the Otago Polytech work. I suppose I'm looking forward to camp.
Yeah. Camp, that should be good.
Yeah. I've had so much really positive feedback from the students about how much they've enjoyed it over the last couple of years.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting involved in that.
That is something to look forward to.
Yep.
Fantastic. And unrelated question session, do you have any questions for me?
Do I have any questions for you?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Just throw it out there. You can just say no.
Well, you started to tell me about your journey.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear about actually what your career journey has been.
Oh, my career journey has been pretty straightforward, really. I went to university and studied psychology and English, and then like immediately came out and went to teacher's college and became an English teacher. And it was very sort of direct line, like I went from learning to teaching the same thing. And I taught for a while. I did do an interesting couple of years in the Middle East teaching there. That was good fun. And then I really started to get interested in Aotearoa New Zealand's mental health crisis because I was starting to see a lot of unhappy teenagers who just had problems I couldn't help with. So I started upskilling. I started a master's in counseling and then sort of realized that was maybe not the right fit. Also, I got pregnant and that I was like, I can't be studying and working and doing this. And then I ended up doing a master's in psychology and I contracted around the country to work with teachers, like looking at how we can work in more positive ways to support the well-being of our young people. Mm. And then, yeah, somehow ended up at Otago Polytechnic. I mean, the contracting to other schools was great, but COVID really ended that. And it looked like all that type of work was going online. And I just realized I was not a person who wanted to live online.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, and that is, you know, that is the thing, right? That so work has changed or that those changes have
You've
sped
gotta
up considerably.
Go with it. Things that might have happened over the next 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
Well, one of the great things I did after that first lockdown is I came and worked here at Otago Access Radio, and I just loved everybody here and the community that it looks after and is a hub for. So that was fantastic. Yeah,
that is great.
But yeah, now I'm at Otago Polytechnic and lecturing and social services at the moment, and we'll see what happens.
Well, you've made that sound so straightforward, but actually it's not, is it?
Really? I mean,
it's a straight line in my mind.
Your whole life and move to another country for a start.
Yeah, that was a weird thing to do. I look at that quite a lot and think, why? How did that happen? But
and
it seemed easier.
You've done it more than once.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's a good point now that you pointed that out. Okay, I'll reflect on that.
That's a big transition.
I'll reflect on that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you a little bit more and having this conversation. So thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much. It's been lovely to chat.
Ka mihi. Thank you for listening to Spotlight on Academics We Know. Thanks to Otago Polytechnic, our people make a better world. Kia tu ki te tahi. If you'd like to listen to this episode again, you'll find the podcast on Otago Access Radio's website, oar.org.nz. This has been So Ok. Mā te wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.